Let's go with a bonus situation.
You are listening to the number one movie in America bonus episode about the Oscar nominees. I'm Robin Hitchcock, and with me is Sean Collier.
It's a pajama cast. We got up early and watched the thing, and now we're talking. And everyone is sleepy, except for Nick and Priyanka, who, like, made sure to note that they're in London and it's the afternoon, so they're comfortable. Like, thanks.
I think, actually, that I'm glad that they did that, because, like, one of the things that people have always kind of enjoyed about the Oscar nomination announcement is that it is 5 a.m. in L.A., and the people doing it are always tired. I personally am one of the people who miss the podium announcement with one actor and the Academy president.
I miss the clearly half-filled room full of people who clap a little bit sometimes.
Yes. I also think that there was one year, maybe the first year that they did the slick production values announcement, where they intercut it with people talking about finding out that they were nominated. Mm. And that was kind of cool. Like, I remember Marcia Gay Harden, What a Thrill, saying that she was in an elevator when she got the phone call, and somebody was like, "What's up?" She was like, "I just got nominated for an Oscar." So, like, that kind of stuff is fun. And now it's, like, just so boring. It's like a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah. And a PowerPoint presentation where they read everything on the slide yet, which is not what you're supposed to do in a good PowerPoint presentation. This underscores the fact that in this era of the Academy, particularly in this era of the Academy, in the cursed year for awards of all kinds, they're just allergic to doing anything that might be perceived as interesting. Like, anything that might be like, "Well, that's fascinating and different." No, we're not. We won't be doing that. We are going to be as predictable and boring as possible.
Yes. All right. So, as we mentioned, it is early in the morning for us, and mm-hmm. especially in pandemic times. Also, we're probably going to drop this tomorrow. And that means that, and I work on Mondays, so that means that this will be barely edited, which means excellent. All of y'all get to find out what we really talk like.
Just casually tossing thoughts back and forth. That's the reality. Movie thought. Right.
Also, we are not with our regular Nomia episode co-host, Camila, who's the one with the good podcasting equipment. So who knows what the audio quality on this is going to be like.
And to her credit, is also the one that could not care less about the Academy Awards, which it's such a weird annual ritual of the people who care the most about the Oscars spending days wringing our hands about the nominations. And I genuinely love the Oscars, and I genuinely love Oscar nomination day and talking about it and breaking it down. It's just, in recent years, and I think this year, although I'm glad to get your reaction, the disappointing things seem to always outweigh the nice, exciting things.
I agree, but I'm also going to repeat what I've said on regular episodes of Nomia, which is I haven't loved very many movies this year, and who knows if it is pandemic fatigue / depression, or not seeing movies in the theater, or them not being actually all that good. That's also possibly going on here.
No one can tell. Not to get off track immediately, but I started to notice that in the middle part, in the bottom of the pandemic valley, I was overrating everything. Like, everything. Mm. I was like, this is good and nice because movies are an escape, and every escape seemed like a good escape. And now that we're theoretically toward the end, cross your fingers, I'm underrating everything because I'm just like antsy and bitter and get on with it about everything. Mm-hmm. I guess that maybe that's why there are movies from the middle of the year, most of which were not nominated or were barely nominated, that seem like unforgivable snubs, and some movies I saw recently that a lot of people seem to like that I'm thinking, yeah, okay, sure, why not?
Right. So, overall, top-level reactions.
For every two steps forward, there are two steps back. I won't say three, because there are things that on paper are very exciting. this being the only time in history there are two women nominated for Best Director. That's great. And one of them being for Promising Young Woman, which feels like the kind Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman, which is nominated all over the place, and feels like the kind of movie that in a normal year would have been overlooked and wasn't, and is a Best Picture nominee and a Best Screenplay nominee. On the other hand, you know, they nominated two women when they easily could have nominated three, and boy, they had to look hard to find a third man to nominate so that they didn't have a majority female Best Directing category. Let's talk more about that rather than, you know, me continuing to rattle off thoughts. How did you feel when those directing candidates were read?
Well, I am currently wearing my Congratulations to Those Men t-shirt, and I am happy that that did not repeat itself this year. Regina King should have been nominated. Yeah. I am delighted that Aaron Sorkin was not nominated, as Aaron Sorkin is my nemesis. I haven't seen another round. I don't know if that guy deserves a nomination. I know it's very highly regarded. Mank is meh. Mank, mm-hmm. which got 10 nominations. As far as I can tell, every other Best Picture nominee got 6 or less. Almost all of them got 6, by the way. And that's based on my quick count. What was the 5 in there? A Promising Young Woman.
Did Sound of Metal manage 6 nominations?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's a nice thing.
Well, because, hang on, let me double check that. Yeah, 6. Because the only, you know, in my immediate reactions, the only pleasant surprise in these nominations is Paul Racy for Sound of Metal.
Yeah, if you don't know who he is, he was, he's nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Sound of Metal, and is hearing impaired and an advocate for the hearing impaired community. I'm probably saying the wrong phrase. They probably do not prefer hearing impaired. And gave a great performance, and, you know, is not, you know, someone who comes to this from Hollywood, for lack of a better phrase, was a great casting and a great person to have in this movie. And he has an award, an Oscar nomination. That's lovely.
Well, I mean, he's an actor, but, and also I thought he was hearing, and that he comes from a family with deaf people, and that is why he speaks sign language. But I'm not 100% sure on this.
You may be correct. In that little editing you do, just edit out whichever one of us was wrong.
Okay.
Or leave all of this in.
I probably have to leave all of that in the way it's constructed.
Yeah.
But still, it's a really lovely performance. And also, I'm happy because I tweeted that I wanted him to get Michael Shannon nominated, which means getting an Oscar nomination after not getting a Globes or SAG nomination. And it worked. Mm. I put it mm-hmm. out into the universe like The Secret.
That was a good use of that. I should have put out into the universe, hey, remember that the Five Bloods was a good movie?
Yeah.
Because boy, did the Academy not. It is nominated for score and what else?
I think it might just be score.
Oh, holy crap. I think you're right. I think its only nomination is for score.
Yeah, I mean, Justice for Delroy Lindo. I think that is probably, you know, going to be the acting snub that sticks in my craw. But I never really thought he was. I mean, no. When I first saw the first half of Five Bloods, I thought, well, Delroy Lindo's going to win. That was before Chadwick Boseman died, or no? When did Chadwick Boseman die? This year's been a blur.
I believe he was alive when Five Bloods came out.
So, right. I think that when I saw the first hour of that movie, I was like, well, Delroy Lindo, future Academy Award winner. But it fell out of the conversation so quickly, because everything has fallen out of the conversation so quickly. You know, it was 2 weeks ago, I think, that I texted you, remember Mank? And you said, not really.
Right,
and here it is, right, with by far the most nominations.
That, I think that's my, to get back around to my top line reaction, is I'm really sick of the Academy loving and raining nominations down upon movies that everyone knows won't really win anything, and
right,
certainly won't really win anything meaningful. It seems like there's this sense that in any given category, there should be, you know, half things that might theoretically win and half things that no one thinks are going to win, but we like, so good for them. When those nominations could be much better served by going to something interesting and different and you know, perhaps representative of one of the many, many groups the Academy is bad at representing. Mm. That, you know, Mank has 10 nominations. I don't know if it's going to win any of them.
The only one I did do my really quick first gut reaction guess as to what's going to win. And there was one thing that I kind of was like, it could win. Oh, it was cinematography, which I think the cinematography in that movie is frankly ugly. I know that that's an unpopular opinion, but that is how I feel. So, but that's the only category where it seems even plausible.
I think it could. The two Mank nominations I don't mind are production design and score. It won't win score because the people who did that score have a better score also nominated, since Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross are double nominees this year and Soul is better and the one that's already won some things. Production design, if Mank wins, fine. Go right ahead. But Mank has 10 nominees. There's no chance it wins Best Picture. There's no chance it wins Best Director. And Gary Oldman isn't going to win.
And it was hilariously not nominated in the screenplay category.
It's a movie about a great screenplay. Does it have a great screenplay? No, no one thinks so.
Right.
I mean, you know, really glossy 8x10 photos of Amanda Seyfried were sent to everyone who's ever voted for a movie award last week. I guess they worked.
I'm okay with that nomination. The supporting actress category this year is the wildest. You know, I don't even remember what movie Michelle Pfeiffer was in. I would prefer her to be nominated just out of Michelle Pfeiffer love. But Amanda Seyfried was pleasant, and she was by far the best thing about Mank.
Yeah, I like her. I don't know how much she did in that movie. To get into talking about some actual lineups, the nominees for Best Supporting Actress are Maria Bakalova for Borat 2. I love that they made Priyanka read the full extended title for Borat during the nominations.
Agreed.
Glenn Close for Hillbilly Elegy, put a pin in it. Olivia Colman for The Father. The Father is my number two to Mank on here's a bunch of nominations. We know you're not going to win any. Amanda Seyfried for Mank and Yoo Jung-yoon for Minari. That's a cool category. That's a cool and interesting category because I don't really know who's going to win it. I feel like Maria Bakalova is going to win it.
That's also how I feel. She's going to get the Mira Sorvino Best Supporting Actress as Best Supporting New Person I Would Like to Fuck.
the previously held by
I think our last one was Alicia Vikander.
Right, I was blanking on the name Alicia Vikander, which is proof of the theory.
Yes.
No, Alicia Vikander's good and I like her. But if she wins, great. Olivia Colman probably won't win, although I've said that about Olivia Colman before and was wrong.
I actually think Yoo Jung-yoon is going to win.
That might be the here Minari have a major award.
Right. If Minari doesn't win in screenplay, that's where they're going to give it a major award. And she's delightful.
Oh, she's great. Either her or Maria Bakalova, which be thrilled with.
This is like tale as old as time with Best Supporting Actress. Is it going to be the old lady or the young ingenue? That's where it goes. I did an in-depth analysis years ago about the ages of acting nominees. And I got to pull up some of those charts because basically young actresses who get nominated are younger than actors in both categories. Young actors do not get nominated for Best Actor. Like they get shuffled into supporting always. Put a pin in that. And supporting actress is the one with the most polarity with young and old. And let's talk about the Glenn Close of it all. Because a lot of people think that she's a lock in supporting actress. And I just will never, ever believe that she can win an Oscar.
It's this weird reverse tautology where it's like, well, because she's never won an Oscar, she's definitely going to win an Oscar. Where even though this is a movie that everyone hates, right. And she hasn't won anything leading up to it, you know, the biggest win leading up to it is not nominated because Jodie Foster was snubbed for The Mauritanian when the Academy realized that no one had watched The Mauritanian. I did. It's pretty good, but you're free to not bother with it. I would hate if after, you know, her storied career and so many snubs, Glenn Close won for a movie that everyone is embarrassed by. That would be awful.
I mean, we were saying that about The Wife, which is a perfectly fine movie. We were just like, oh, you know, and also, like, I thought that Glenn Close was excellent in that movie. And from what I hear, she's not good in Hillbilly Elegy.
I think she's fine.
Okay.
Boy, do I hate to play into the Hillbilly Elegy narrative, but I'm going to do so directly. I think people who live in Hollywood and New York and have not met 87 salty yet wise 72-year-old women of this ilk think she's bad. And living and growing up in Pittsburgh, I'm like, oh, this is a remarkably accurate portrait of what people like this are like.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she's perfectly good. That movie is bad. That movie is not just wrong-headed. It's also a bad movie.
Mm.
But both she and Amy Adams, who did not get the automatic Hopeless Amy Adams nomination this morning, they're both fine.
Mm.
Are you death racing, by the way? Because then you'd have to watch Hillbilly Elegy.
I'm going to watch Hillbilly Elegy. I mean, keep in mind that beyond the death race, which I will not complete this year because of pandemic and some of these movies I've never even heard of, at least one of them I know is not going to be available, which might mean that I do the, what was that movie about spaceship rape?
Passengers,
yes. The Passengers loophole. If I cannot win, I don't have to watch things nominated in minor categories. I may apply that to, for example, The Midnight Sky. Knowing myself, though, because The Midnight Sky is available to stream for free, I'm going to watch it.
Like, it is better. Hey, it's better than Passengers.
Okay.
What do you think you can't see?
Quo Vadis Aida, only available in theaters.
I'm not going to go through this year because there would be little joy in it. It's, you know, I'm searching for movie watching experiences that brighten these lean pandemic days, and that does not include, like, I guess I'll watch Pinocchio, a movie which I'm sure doesn't actually exist. So I can say this thing, you know, there's a bunch of things I haven't seen that I would love to see. I'll probably watch Another Round. I'll probably watch Collective. I would love to watch Life, is it? The documentary nominee that some people had as their best movie of 2021 or 2020, I should say. But yeah, I'm not going to try. With apologies to a Shaun the Sheep movie, Farmageddon, I am not going to try to get to all of these this year.
I don't see Life on my spreadsheet, but I might have got that wrong.
I might just be picking the wrong brief word. Time.
Okay. Time, okay.
Right. Like Life, but a slightly different word. two of the letters are the same. yeah, I saw Time as the number. It's one of those... there's nothing like it. It's a movie where... It is a movie where someone filmed parts of their life over a long period of time.
Oh, okay.
Is apparently very, very moving. But back to acting.
What I was going to say is that beyond the Oscars death race, I have my quest, right? Like if I, in my brain, am eventually going to watch the movie Manhattan because Meryl Hemingway got a Best Supporting Actress nomination for it 40 years ago, I am going to watch Hillbilly Elegy before the Academy Awards this year. Again, streaming for free, right?
Yeah, that's for a 14th tangent. I wonder, you know, if more people are going to see more of the movies because so many of them are so available.
Yes.
I hope that's the case. I hope that inspires people to see movies like Minari and Sound of Metal, especially, which do feel a lot like in movies that in a normal year would just be seen by, you know, the art house set and deserve more people to see them.
Agreed.
Speaking of Sound of Metal and Paul Racy's very exciting nomination, that category, Best Supporting Actor. So Sacha Baron Cohen was nominated for Trial of the Chicago 7. I don't really know why, other than there's a bizarre amount of excess love for Trial of the Chicago 7, and he is obviously very big right now, so that's felt like a lock the whole way. Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah is the front runner. Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami used to be the front runner, probably isn't anymore, but was kind of always going to get a nomination. Paul Racy for Sound of Metal and Lakeith Stanfield for Judas and the Black Messiah. Robin, explain to the perhaps not as Oscar nerdy listeners why that is wild.
I mean, okay, it's not, you don't have to be that big of a nerd to know that it is weird when the clear lead of a movie is nominated in a supporting category. Usually category fraud goes in the opposite direction. And then additionally, I don't actually know the detailed rules on this, but normally what happens is that studios put out these for your consideration packages, right? They mail Sean DVDs and bottles of liquor. And right. On the DVD, it will say to you, for your consideration in the following categories, and they will tell you what they want you to nominate and in which category. And according to Sean, here they said, for your consideration, Lakeith Stanfield for Best Actor. And the Academy said no. Or they said yes, but, I guess.
It's so, so bizarre in this case. One, because he's clearly the lead actor. But two, you know, occasionally this happens where something will say, some studio will say, this movie has no lead actor, everyone is considered for supporting. Trial of the Chicago 7 did that. Trial of the Chicago 7 said, none of these people are the lead, they are all supporting actors. That doesn't happen in a movie that's like about one guy, right? and then has some other people. If Kaluuya had somehow been nominated for Best Actor, not supporting, that would have been way less shocking, because agreed, as you said, it happens in reverse all the time. I have no idea why. I have no idea how, like, the idea of doing this comes up in a thousands deep voting body that votes however they want for everything, when the things they're getting in the mail say, this isn't this, that this is that. That's why I say from an Oscar nerdery perspective, it is difficult to understand how this happened.
The other thing that I will say from an Oscar nerdery perspective is that if he got more votes in the Best Actor category than one of the eventual nominees, he would be eliminated from the Best Actor category. The Barry Fitzgerald rule. In the Best Picture winner Going My Way, Barry Fitzgerald was nominated for both Best Actor alongside eventual winner Bing Crosby and Best Supporting Actor, in which he won. And after that, they changed the rule so you can only be nominated in one category. If you get votes in both, they nominate you in the category where you got more votes, which would clear the way for Anthony Hopkins in this case.
I think Anthony Hopkins got Anthony Hopkins higher on that list. I think Steven Yeun was fifth in Best
for
Actor.
For racism reasons?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Because he said words that weren't in English. How do we even know if he's acting well?
Right.
To move on to Best Act. Well, first, is anything going to stop Daniel Kaluuya from winning Best Supporting Actor?
No, and the reason I would say that's the case is because I believe that Leslie Odom Jr. got a songwriting credit.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the case, right? So he is a nominee in Best Original Song for Speak Now.
I believe that's true.
Okay, so they will give him that Oscar.
Right.
Lady Gaga style. And again, I'm all for this because I thought he was the weakest actor by a lot. So
I think you are correct. If you are incorrect, I think that it will be because now all of a sudden Lakeith and Daniel split the vote
right.
of the Judas and the Black Messiah stands, and Leslie Odom Jr. gets it. because I don't think Sacha Baron Cohen or Paul Raci are really in it. That would be weird, but not the weirdest thing that's ever happened.
Agreed.
So up to Best Actor, Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal. That's nice and exciting and good for him, though he's not going to win. Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, all but a lock. Anthony Hopkins for The Father and Gary Oldman for Mank are here being, sure, you're a nominee, nominees. And Steven Yeun for Minari, which is nice. I saw on Twitter just before we started recording, this is the first time that two actors of Asian descent have been nominated at the same time. So that's great.
Okay, that's interesting. I saw a lot of people saying that Steven Yeun was the first Asian American. And I was like, Pittsburgh's own F. Murray Abraham is Syrian. Mm-hmm. Yep. But that is West Asian. So does it count? Right. Who knows?
Yeah, there is absolutely nothing in that list that will stop a posthumous Oscar for Chadwick Boseman, right?
Yeah. Who knows? But I would, that is by far to me the biggest lock of the entire nominee slate.
And justice for Delroy Lindo, but I mean, it's weird when Promising Young, I started this saying Promising Young Woman is basically one of those movies that looks like it's too cool for the Academy, but wasn't. But I think Five Bloods was too cool for the Academy. It's deeply unwell, to borrow, this had Oscar buzz's phrase, it's deeply unwell that that's still happening to Spike Lee movies 32 years after Do the Right Thing. But, you know, Five Bloods is different and bold and daring. And I think that that combined with a very early in the year release was too much for the Academy's average age 107-year-old voter.
Yeah, and it's going to just be worse now that Spike Lee does have an Oscar. They're like, one and done. Goodbye forever. Which is horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Until he makes something in a year without, you know, an obvious, yeah, the Christoph Waltz caveat. Like, we don't know. You have another. We already agree that you're worthy of this. Here's another one.
I fully object to Christoph Waltz and Spike Lee ever being in the same sentence.
I mean, you know, people, if the sentence is, name two people who you'd be really excited if you were at a dinner party with them, but would find yourself oddly sick of them 90 minutes in. That is true. Both of those people.
I think I would get tired of Christoph Waltz after like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
He deserved that first Oscar.
Sure. And then got another one.
That's correct.
Man, I wonder what that movie looks like. I wonder what Inglourious Basterds looks like a second time around, because I don't know how often people are going back to it. And initially it was like, this is one of the best Tarantinos. I wonder if it still is.
I mean, I watched it for the first time within the last 5 years, and oh, wow, it's pretty good. You know, I liked it a lot.
Best Actress. This is another...
Who's going to win this? I mean, I think it's Frances McDormand. So, you know, dust off the urn that they keep Katharine Hepburn's ashes in, because she's got a new person to haunt.
I also think it's Frances McDormand, despite her not winning a big thing yet, mm-hmm, which is what makes it very interesting. Viola Davis from Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I also saw, I apologize for which one of these is wrong, she's either now the most nominated Black woman or just plain the most nominated Black person in history.
Denzel beats her.
Yeah.
Okay. By a lot.
So she's the most nominated Black woman in history. That's great. She won't win, but I'm very happy she's on this list. Andra Day for the United States versus Billie Holiday. She won a Golden Globe and has won some other stuff, even though the movie's not good. So I guess she could theoretically win.
I mean, Renee Zellweger won last year. Once again, a person who already has one Oscar. It feels weird for them to have two, unlike Spike Lee. He should have 60. Right. And, you know, she's really good in it.
Yeah.
And Frances McDormand already has two Oscars.
Frances McDormand for Nomadland. It won't be Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman, but I'm glad I was right when I told you 3 months ago Vanessa Kirby will be soon be Academy Award nominee.
And I was hugely incredulous, kind of in the way that I am hugely incredulous that Glenn Close will win an Oscar ever in her life, and certainly not for Hillbilly Elegy, but I owe Sean a beer.
You didn't watch that, did you?
No, but I will.
Yeah, it's
again streaming for free.
I know a lot of people had no idea what that movie was when today dawned. Like United States versus Billie Holiday, it's not really a good movie, and Vanessa Kirby is great in it. I love the performances where they're not, where they are very restrained, where they are not like visibly doing a lot, yet they're still so good that they get nominated for Best Actress. Mm. That's why she was on my ballot for the Critics' Choice Awards. And Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman. I think she could win too.
Maybe. Here's the thing. You know, we've alluded to this several times. Promising Young Woman being a heavy hitter in Oscar nominations is fully weird.
Yeah.
Would not happen but for the pandemic. That is the kind of movie that most people in the Academy, again, the 107-year-old white men, mm-hmm. will actively hate.
Yeah.
So I just don't see her winning or it winning in any category.
It may not win in any category. If I were betting today, I wouldn't bet a lot of money on this race because I don't know, but I would bet on Andra Day.
Okay, and I'm going to go with Frances McDormand. That was my initial reaction. But it will be lovely if Andra Day wins. She's great.
Lightning round of screenplay nominees, because we will eventually lose you on this conversation. We're not going to do this for every category. But to lightning round through screenplay. Original, Judas and the Black Messiah, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. Sure, those are some nominees. Fine. I really would have loved 40-year-old version to have, Agreed. Scored its sole nomination here. It is a total snub. But yeah, okay. I guess I feel like we should just accept now that Trial of the Chicago 7 is going to win this.
I refuse to accept that. I think that this could be the category that they throw something at Minari, but.
Yeah, or Promising Young Woman. But I think you were right a moment ago where Promising Young Woman is too cool. And adapted screenplay, Borat subsequent movie film, The Father, Nomadland, One Night in Miami, The White Tiger. Good for you, White Tiger. You prove that Netflix can get anything a lone nomination. I don't know, some people like that more than me. My big take here is, why do Borat movies get screenplay nominations? They're mostly improvised. Both the original Borat got a screenplay nomination as well. And I have no idea. I did not sit down and read the Borat subsequent movie film screenplay, but it came in the mail and I looked at it, and what they sent me was not even the screenplay for the film. It was someone writing down what happened.
No.
Like, the screenplay they sent me had what Rudy Giuliani says in it. So, right. Like, that's not the screenplay. That's you turning an improvised film into a script after the fact. Why does this happen?
Oh, I mean, I'm okay with it in the Before Sunset, Before Midnight situation where the performers get the nomination. That may be partially the case here. The one thing I noticed in the early wee hours of the morning when I had a cup of coffee is that they listed like 14 people when they read that nomination off. So I don't know if any of those are the performers. I did not hear Maria Bakalova's name. So
yeah,
probably not. Yeah, I don't know. And then additionally, my friend Ben asked, why is it adapted? What is it adapted from? And I originally said the first film. And then I looked up, the first film also was nominated for adapted. So I guess he did that character on TV, right?
Yeah, that must be it.
That's probably it. That's still right. Weird.
From the LA show.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the category. And Nomadland is a very good movie. It is not one of the ones I am championing. And it is not nearly one of my favorite movies of the year. Adapted is where I'm fine with it winning, because it feels like a bold and interesting work of adaptation.
Yeah. What is it adapted from?
I believe it is adapted from a nonfiction book about
the
lives of nomads.
I wonder if this is going to be a One Night in Miami win. Although they often, I believe that they're pretty touchy about, we put a camera in front of a play, nominees. So that might not come to pass.
Yeah, of all of the Ma Rainey's Black Bottom snubs, I mind this one the least, because that really is, like, I don't know how much adaptation was happening there. That's just the already existing. And to me, adapted screenplay should be, you did an interesting job of turning something else into a movie, which is less the case when it's
right.
a play on film.
Right. But anyway, so, on to Best Picture.
Sure.
Nomadland's gonna win, I think.
I think whatever I said the last time I said this, I think it was on one of our main feed episodes. That implies that we have separate feeds. We don't. I think Nomadland wins unless somehow Minari wins. The nominees are The Father, again. What? Okay, fine. Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of Chicago 7. The ones on that list that are absolutely not winning are The Father, Promising Young Woman, and Sound of Metal.
Right. Mank and Trial of the Chicago 7 will only win if there is a white man rally towards one or the other. They're probably going to split the white man vote, plus Netflix bias.
Yeah, I think Trial of the Chicago 7 is closer because...
Agreed. By a lot.
Every day this award season, something has happened that has reminded me that a lot of people really like that movie for some reason.
I don't know. Don't get it. It was fine.
It's an Aaron Sorkin movie that does the Aaron Sorkin things well and has a couple of good scenes.
I enjoyed it more than Mank, honestly.
I'd like to think that Judas and the Black Messiah has an outside chance at a stunning upset victory, but I don't really think that. So I think that if I'm making a case for anything other than Nomadland, it's Minari. Minari does have a lot of nominations. People like it a lot.
It does have this feeling that the people who like it more than the people who like Nomadland.
Yeah.
And it also, there is a strong potential for Nomadland backlash in a way that Minari,
there's plenty of time for that.
There's a lot of time for it, and it just has problematic political elements, essentially, the two main points of which are that it kind of makes Amazon seem like a good thing, and did Amazon pay for that? It's very weird. It is really weird.
It's so weird that they're in there by name.
And that it's not an Amazon Prime movie. It kind of feels like they were like, oh, that would be too transparent. Let's give it to Hulu.
I don't know. It's. I mean, maybe it is as simple as, if we are not critical of Amazon, we can get away with mentioning them and not getting sued. So let's do that. But that's bizarre.
So the Amazon feature, and then additionally, it's just it's a very white movie, especially for one largely set in the parts of the country that have the largest native population. So
So I guess it's Nomadland or Minari, but it feels like it's Nomadland. I say that with the caveat that we don't know what wins Best Picture anymore.
Right.
We've talked about this previously. Parasite felt very surprising and welcome. That's great. Green Book felt very surprising and unwelcome. Green Book happened after, what was immediately before Green Book?
The Shape of Water.
Shape of Water was also surprising. You know, I kind of figured that Shape of Water was going to win by doing some mental...
There was backlash for Three Billboards.
Right. And Moonlight was a surprise. Right down to the last minute, it was a surprise. The biggest surprise of them all. So it's hard to know what wins Best Picture nowadays, but I'm sure that when the odds are made, Nomadland will be the heavy favorite.
Yes.
So any other Stray thoughts. The Academy's anti-horror bias is alive and well. Shudder is denied their international feature nomination. Justice for Law, Your Honor, I say, having seen exactly zero of the nominees, so I don't know how many of them better than.
Yes. I don't have final thoughts because, you know.
It's early and this is exhausting?
Yes. No, truly, when they announced Best Director, and you know, the first nominee they announced was Thomas Vinterberg for Another Round, which is a big surprise, I was like, oh, well, somebody's getting snubbed. And then I didn't know who it was, which apologies to Regina King. Like, for the rest of my life, I'm going to feel guilty that I didn't think about Regina King in that moment. And I'm the most genuinely concerned about my mental well-being because I didn't do a victory lap about Sorkin getting snubbed there.
According to the odds makers, let's double back to director very, very briefly, because we teased it and then did not talk about it. This is the first time ever that two women, Emerald Fennell and Chloe Zhao, are nominated for Best Director. That's very, very, very exciting. It is muted by the fact that it would have been really easy to get to three women nominated for Best Director by nominating Regina King for One Night in Miami. That said, I haven't seen Another Round. I don't know about Thomas Vinterberg. I have no problem with Lee Isaac Chung being nominated.
Right.
Fincher is obviously the one, David Fincher from Mank is obviously the one I would lose. But according to the odds makers, Thomas Vinterberg did not directly snub Regina King. Thomas Vinterberg directly snubbed Sorkin. It like she lost not momentum, and it was thought that Sorkin was the fifth nominee. So
okay.
I don't know. Is the enemy of your enemy your friend in this
case? Yes.
Will you take the Regina King snub in exchange for Sorkin also being snubbed?
Oh, that is a choice I'm not prepared to make right now.
Right.
No, but I agree. I guess that, a Twitter account that I follow said, like, what does your gut tell you right now? 0 to 3 nominations for women directors. And I said, my heart says 2 and my head laughs. So my heart was right. So that's good.
And Academy, don't screw this up, but Chloe Zhao should absolutely march to that win.
Right.
Lee Isaac Chung, Emerald Fennell, and Thomas Vinterberg are probably not in it, which means the only thing in the way is Fincher, and dear God, don't make that mistake this year. You know, the second woman to win Best Director is probably coming this year. So
which
that's
is exciting.
Great.
And I hope she wears a t-shirt again.
Yeah. Her like, I'll be here and I'll be genuinely happy about it, but I'm not putting anything on.
Right.
Come on.
I'm going to wear a t-shirt at my desk with a mug.
What are even the weird little ones this year? I don't even have... It's cool that A Thing is nominated for both documentary feature and international feature, Collective from Romania. I haven't seen it, but that's nice. Eurovision sneaks in with the song nomination.
I'm happy that happened.
It's a great song. Hoo boy, visual effects. Love and Monsters.
I don't even know what Love and Monsters is, or the one and only Ivan. What are these things?
I don't know. I mean, Love and Monsters, I know. Love and Monsters was at drive-ins for a hot second in the fall. I got the impression that it was a kind of an also-ran, like, YA fantasy type thing, but that might be entirely wrong.
Right.
And the one and only Ivan, I think, is a weird documentary?
Okay.
I think it's a... My brain says it's a Disney Nature or Disney Nature type thing.
Wild. No,
it is Disney. The one and only Ivan is a 2020 American fantasy drama film based on the children's novel of the same name.
Huh.
Inspired by the true story of Ivan the Gorilla.
Is this on Disney Plus?
It's on Disney Plus.
Okay, good. So this is the standard we made an animal out of Pixels nominee.
Yeah.
Which often wins, by the way.
Starring the voices of Sam Rockwell, Angelina Jolie, Danny DeVito, Helen Mirren, Chaka Khan, Ron Funches, Bryan Cranston, and Brooklyn Prince. what, where did this movie come from?
The year without blockbusters is where it came from.
Now we're in another category, but visual effects is weird. Midnight Sky and Tenet, sure. But the fact that the other three are Love and Monsters, Mulan, and the one and only Ivan, when like there were blockbusters with visual effects. It could have been Birds of Prey. It could have been The Invisible Man. They're like, wow, wow.
Anyway, what I was going to say is that as I was filling out my spreadsheet and I had to delete the additional sound category because they combined the sound categories, thank God, I realized that, you know, people have been clamoring for them to add a stunts category for years. And next year, the return of blockbusters seems like the perfect time to do it.
I think you're right. I think that it probably will not happen only because any change they say they're making for some reason takes 4 years to implement.
I disagree, though, because they clearly changed everything this year.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But, you know, didn't we hear that sound was combining like 3 years ago? And didn't we hear that they were locking in 10 nominees instead of between 5 and 10 like 2 years ago? And we're just getting around to making the sound change now, and they're just getting around to making the number of Best Picture nominees change next year?
Yeah, I believe that the sound category combination and the locked in 10 were announced in 2019.
Yeah.
So that's not that long ago, but they've been talking about combining the sound categories for as long as I can remember. So, you know, that's coming. I'm really glad that they're locking in 10. You know, this year there's 8, and at least one of them feels superfluous. But again, weird year for the movies. But I think that locking in 10 is going to, A, make my spreadsheet prettier, and B, allow for movies like Promising Young Woman to stay in the race. Unfortunately, we'll also allow for things like Mank and The Father to get pointless nominations, the Ford v. Ferrari spot.
Right. The serious thing that will be my ending note, and then my my penultimate note, and then the silly thing to bring it back around. The serious thing is the 8 nominees makes it, you know, hurt worse when there are some big snubs in Best Picture. If there are 10 nominees and you give out 10 nominees, then, you know, this thing that was close, you know, people just liked this other thing more.
Right.
When 8, it's like, we could have nominated you, we just didn't bother. And if you look at the odds, the three things most likely to get nominated that were not nominated were One Night in Miami, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and The Five Bloods.
Right.
Which...
And also, I gotta say that, you know, again, I did not finish The Five Bloods, but that's not because it's not good. It's because I was freaking out.
Yeah.
Honestly, Judas of the Black Messiah is probably my least favorite on that list.
Yeah. It's who knows what is working and what is not in their ongoing diversification and less oldification efforts. But... You know, if your headline is those three movies I just mentioned are the biggest Best Picture snubs, you're doing something slightly wrong still.
Yeah.
In the face of a pretty good diverse lineup of acting nominees, and in the face of you know, some progress in a lot of the categories, that's where it's not happening.
Right. My understanding of the rules is you have to get a certain number of first place votes to make it. That is why some years there's 9 and some years there's 8, and theoretically there could be 10 in the years that they've had this variable number of nominees, which I believe started in 2012.
which begs the question, what 99-year-old former publicist said The Father is the best film of the year? It's so weird.
Exactly. But a lot of them, clearly. But I'm also curious, I wouldn't expect a lot of people to say that Judas and the Black Messiah is their number one movie in the year. But it is possible they are seeing something that I did not see. I thought that was a very interesting movie that was muddled. I mean, Daniel Kaluuya deserves to win, and Lakeith Stanfield deserves to be nominated. It's weird which category he's nominated in, but as we've discussed over and over again, great performance does not make a great movie, and I do not think it's a great movie. I mean, no, I don't know. I really liked it, but I think it's a little muddled. That's where I land on. Every moment that I was watching it, I was engaged, which I cannot say for most of these movies.
Yeah, I think it's in, and Robin and I have had this conversation at various points. This is an echo of the, are these movies less good or are we all depressed question. I had just a boatload of 9 out of 10s this year.
Yeah.
Just so many, like, this is very good. There's very little to complain about. And it does not do whatever has to happen to get it to that next level for me.
Right.
And I think Judas and the Black Messiah is one of those. I think Nomadland is one of those. The only 10s I had all year were The Five Bloods, 40-year-old version, and Minari. So it's likely that there's a couple other movies that are that good and just, you know, hit me on the wrong day or the wrong year. My frivolous parting note, and then I will ask you for yours, is what's Pinocchio? What is a Pinocchio? Did it come from? Two nominations for Pinocchio, a movie that happened allegedly.
I vaguely recall this movie existing, but I also, it's one of those movies that I feel it's like a computer generated Pinocchio, right?
I think.
Although, wait, did it get a makeup nomination? I don't know. No, I don't know is what I'm going to leave in. I have no idea. I vaguely recall it existing, but yikes.
I think it's live action with a Gollum style Pinocchio starring Roberto Benigni as Geppetto.
Oh.
And okay. It has
remember his Pinocchio movie? Remember when he played Pinocchio like deep into his 40s?
I don't, but apparently it left an impression on him because all he wants to do is Pinocchio's. It's so weird because I briefly thought, is this the one that we haven't seen yet? Because there's like a Guillermo del Toro attached Pinocchio that is forthcoming. I don't know.
Who knows what Pinocchio is?
Nobody. What are your conclusions? How do you conclude this rant?
I guess that I will. My main conclusion is that there are a lot of movies nominated this year. There's 40 nominated features from my initial count, and I have not seen half of them. And it's been a long time since I've had this much catch up to do for an Oscars death race. Yay.
You'll inevitably find delights and things that that you rejoice in, and
that's why I do it.
Right, and then you'll also watch Hillbilly Elegy.
Exactly. So, okay, well, thank you so much for listening to everyone who made it through our self-indulgent Oscar reactions that we chose to record and release into the world.
Yeah. Again, as I said earlier, we hate it and we love it. So exactly. If you are indulging us in listening to all of this, that's very nice of you, and we appreciate it. We will have an episode on The Toy still dropping, I believe, 2 weeks from now as you hear this.
Right. Normally we will have the mini-sodes in the off weeks, but this one is topical.
And cut this out if I'm wrong, but I think we will have a mini-sode in the off week, will we not?
And we are going to have a mini-sode next week about a certain 4-hour movie.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
I made the bargain with myself as I was like, will that be the only thing I review this week because it's the length of 2.5 movies and I don't have any more strength left? No, there's a Shudder original about a pair of pants that comes to life and kills everybody. That is the gift I will give myself for making it through Justice League, is that I will also review the Killer Pants movie.
What I was going to say is I remember on Ain't It Cool News, remember that nightmare? 1999, they had an article shortly before The Phantom Menace came out called What If It's Bad? Or maybe it was even What If It's Not Good? Like, and right. It was one of those things where it was just like, you know, just everyone needs to prepare themselves for the possibility this movie could be not good. And
I am prepared for that possibility.
Well, my reaction right now is, what if it's good? Yeah, I do not know what I will do if it's good.
That will require a dramatic recalibration of my worldview if Justice League happens to be good. I will shut up soon, I promise. What bothers me is, I bet you if they had done the miniseries thing, it would have felt pretty good. If they had done this in 4 to 6 episodes, it might not have been the best thing ever, but it would have been these like 50-minute bites of Wonder Woman and Batman and the Flash having, you know, an adventure, albeit, you know, not the best adventure, but you would have been like, oh, good time. I watched it over a couple of days and it was nice. And instead, it's a 4-hour movie. So instead of, you know, doing something that could have helped, it did something that hurts. So we'll find out.
Yeah. And as you may recall from me and Sean recorded an episode of You Can't Handle the Truth. You know, we did the old school in the cafe of the theater immediate reactions podcast. And I was, you know, I think I gave it a 5. I was like, this is fine. I enjoyed watching it. So, you know, I thought it was like roughly equal to whatever Jurassic World movie came out that year. So I didn't hate it. So maybe that will leave me more inclined to like the allegedly better version of it.
We'll find out. And we might also talk to you about Avatar, because we were going to do that today, but had too many Oscar thoughts.
We could say is Avatar's the highest grossing movie of all time, again, for reasons.
Avatar fans, please identify yourselves, because I don't think you exist. Great. Robin, how do we end a mini-sode?
I've got a trivia question for you.
Okay.
You're not going to know the answer to it, so it's a terrible trivia question. But Glenn Close is the third actor nominated for a Razzie and an Oscar for the same performance. Any guesses as to the other two?
Oh, man.
You don't know. This is a terrible way to end this episode.
if I get within a mile of it, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
I feel like the answer might be Sandra Bullock, but I'm probably confusing that with winning them both the same year.
Yes. Yes, that is the case. She was nominated for, I think, All About Steve for a Razzie.
Yeah. She accepted it. She's one of the rare people to accept her Razzie. And got a Razzie and an Oscar on the same weekend for The Blind Side. So what is the actual answer?
Is Amy Irving for Yentl and James Coco for Only When I Laugh, which are the two perfect examples of everything that is wrong with the Razzies. Because Amy Irving is delightful in Yentl, and that movie should have been nominated for many, many more things. But they hate Barbara Streisand because she is a woman who does what she wants. And so they were like, I think that Yentl got nominated in like 15 Razzie categories. And James Coco plays a gay character. He might have been gay himself. I do not know. And they hate gay people. The Razzies are all about hating women and gays.
It's not fun to trash things, except that's most of what we do. So don't do as I say, not as I do. No, this is a good concept. We end the mini episodes with trivia questions. The other one won't get the answer to.
That is a terrible concept.
Here's mine. I watched Us again last night. Still great. Better every time I see it. One of the frequent visual references in Us is The Shining. Us also has a family member tie to The Shining. What is it?
I don't even understand what that question means.
A cast member in The Shining is related to a cast member in Us.
Oh, I have no idea. No earthly clue.
I did not know until last night that there is an actor named Duke Nicholson who has a small part in Us. To this day, I can't figure out who he was. I think he might have been the guy working either the whack-a-mole game or the throwing ball game where he wins the Michael Jackson t-shirt. Duke Nicholson is an actor and the grandson of Jack Nicholson.
Good for him.
Yeah, sure. You continue to exist. He's on the cover of the Lana Del Rey Norman fucking Rockwell album. He's the guy on that cover.
I say again, well, good for him.
Good for Duke.